Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
As you get ready to expand your knowledge this offseason, make sure to save the date for USA Football's 2020 National Conference taking place February 21st through the 23rd in Louisville, Kentucky. This is more than just a clinic. It's your chance to hone your ability to teach proven and effective techniques while connecting with coaches across the country. Most coaches are satisfied if their regional clinic delivers just one or two nuggets of information. National Conference delivers a one-of-a-kind, high school-focused, live field experience that will give you an abundance of drills and techniques to improve your team's performance. Coaches can deep dive into both X's and O's and technique at classroom and chalk talk sessions. Finally, USA Football delivers top keynote speakers year after year. Here's a few of the keynotes from previous years: Mike Tomlin, John Gruden, PJ Fleck, and Jeremy Pruitt. As an added bonus this year, paying attendees can get access to the advanced tackling system and contact system for blocking and defeating blocks following the event, and have a chance to earn the new advanced contact certification. If you're ready to get to work on next season, don't miss out on USA Football's National Conference. Learn more at nationalconference.usafootball.com/podcast. Enter the code PODCAST179 to save at registration. It's another Wednesday, which means it's Trends Day on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. This will be our last Trends Day here in 2019. We're going to finish up here talking about the championship games and some of the NFL games from this past weekend, even some high school state championships, as well as talking about the job changes and some of the things that go into making some of those decisions, and even trends right now that we're seeing early here in the coaching change part of the year. And joining me, as they always do, I have Charlie Coyner, First Down Playbook, former NFL coach, CEO, and founder of First Down Playbook. Charlie, been a great year. Good to have you back here one more time.
It has been, Keith. It's been really fun.
And then Zach Dunn, our coordinator of coach content and analyst himself at USA Football. Zach, been a great year. Great having your analysis here as well.
Yeah, Keith, can't wait.
All right, guys, so we are going to get into a discussion here of coaching in general and some of the trends we're seeing here as the coaching carousel starts to get moving here. But before we do that, let's finish up the year talking about a few plays. I think things that we've seen all year long for some teams, we saw in the championship games. I want to kick things off with the running game of Wisconsin. And we've seen Wisconsin have a nice power running game, but they've added a lot of elements of misdirection. And as we showed on our All-22 Tuesday, even some false keys. And we saw that come in a touchdown against Ohio State with a quarterback keep off of what looked like to one side an outside zone play, to the other side potentially a jet sweep and a quarterback maybe making a read and then just keeping the ball down the field. And really, you know, as we said on the video, really just taking advantage of the defense being where they're supposed to be.
Absolutely, Keith. That, you know, you're talking about Wisconsin power, you know, run the ball right over top of people. And once again, I've mentioned this on this show maybe the last couple of weeks. It's been very interesting for me to actually follow the trends. And Wisconsin, they've gotten on board. And I'm sure they still run the power and they still do all those things. But, I mean, you've got two plays that we broke down yesterday on All-22 Tuesday where, you know, you've got guys pulling opposite directions. You've got people zoning to one side, the other side zoning the other, and reading the defensive end. I think that, you know, the name of this show, to me, that is maybe the biggest trend that we have seen this year. I might be wrong, but I'm just every week, what has been impressive to me is how people have just said something that they wouldn't have done 5 years ago, because you just don't do that. They're doing it now. And we're seeing you know, jet sweeps going one way and rounds going the other, and a lot of different things like that. So, yeah, it's been extremely interesting to see that some of the very same concepts that you guys emphasize at USA Football with your wing tee concepts and even in flag football. You can't block them in flags and you're going to have misdirection, right? So what we're seeing is that that has bled up. I don't know if that's the right terminology or not, all the way up into through the NFL.
Yeah, and I think, Zach, you'll agree. I mean, anytime you can create something where you separate the defense. You know, we've seen defenses more and more being built for speed, being built to stop the spread, and you have fast guys on defense. I remember a coach, you know, we were talking about a certain player we had to go up against, and we were like, man, that guy, let's say that guy runs a 4-3. He's like, he's going to run a 4-3 right out of position, though, too. And, you know, that's some of it. I mean, you see Ohio State on the one particular play I'm mentioning, you know, with speed, get to where they're supposed to be. And because of that, the quarterback essentially walks into the end zone. I mean, that's probably the least athletic skill guy on the field that day, but he goes untouched. And, you know, we've seen it throughout the season. I can remember, you know, we talked about plays on All 22 Tuesday early in the year. We saw from Notre Dame running pin and pull one way, running jet sweep the other way, and you know the middle of the defense just opening wide up for, you know, anybody who might keep the ball to run down the middle of the field. So it's one of those things now where you see all the hybrid defenders, you see a lot of speed on the field, and the one thing to do is to get them run out of position and attack them that way.
Well, if you're going to defend 53 and a third, then that was the big deal where everybody was doing that initially. If you're going to defend 53 and a third, then you still got to defend the middle.
Yep. Go ahead there, Zach.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, well, what I was going to say is when you're facing a fast defense like that, especially a fast-flowing defense, you know, you can really slow them down when you start reading guys. You know, when you start reading defensive ends, you start, you know, maybe locking the tackle on that defensive end and reading the backer. Now you really start to slow down the defense down, and they're, and you know, they start to think more than just play and react. But remember, in 2016, Clemson, Ohio State played in the Fiesta Bowl in the semifinal game, and one thing that Clemson, I think, had mentioned after the game was they noticed that Ohio State's linebackers they were not really reading guards as much as they were reading ball. So they were fast with you, as in. Shiano, those guys, they were more so having them slow to the ball. So what they did was they, out of shotgun, they had the back offset to the right, and what they would do was they would fake the toss to the running back, and they would run quarterback counter back left. And what happened is the backers would see that fake toss, and they were fast slow backers, and they would get over the top now because they weren't necessarily reading guards. They were reading the back, which is what I was told. So they were reading the back. They were fast going over the top now, and what's happening is that guard would be, you know, he would get the flame down on the three back side. And, you know, there would pretty much be no backside backer to get because he would be already flying over the top to the field trying to stop the toss play. So I know that, you know, when you start playing a fast flowing defense like that and you start doing stuff like that, a lot of misdirection and really, really reading guys, you can really slow them down and make them look a lot slower or look a lot slower than what they really are.
Yeah, it's been one of the things we've talked about all year, just the use of that misdirection. And, you know, I think I related it in one of those first weeks of, you know, just seeing that be really effective. And something, you know, I started out my coaching career and learned from some wing T guys and, you know, went away from running, you know, the traditional wing T, but a lot of those elements of misdirection and learning what they do to a defense stuck with me. Now, I had guys who I would see at clinics all the time when they saw me line up in a spread offense. They told me they were taking my card away. I didn't know there was a card, but, you know, those wing T guys, it's a little bit of a call. It's a fun offense. And so it's neat to see all those things really becoming, you know, becoming mainstream, I guess, in football, right? Even in the NFL, you see a team, and we've talked about all year long, like, the Ravens, you know, just excelling with their quarterback run game, but having just so much misdirection, having so much going on in there that it really becomes difficult to defend. And you know, now when you see some of the false keys, like we pulled out a play from Minnesota, Wisconsin, where half the line pulled one way underneath the other part of the line, which was pulling for a sweep. I mean, you know, a lot of moving parts there. They actually had to leave a guy unblocked. But matchup-wise, who were they were getting their big bodies on was like a really effective play. I mean, you had 300-pounders on guys who probably didn't weigh 200. And so just so much creativity in it. It's the same concepts, though, again and again. I mean, it's your pin and pull. It's outside zone, inside zone, your gap schemes, but showing up in so many creative ways that, you know, you don't have to just line up anymore and count on having the dudes and just, you know, the physical. I mean, it's still going to be a physical game, but, like, it's really fun to watch, too. You know, as we've looked at all these games this season, you know, I don't know how many times I've texted you guys on a Saturday or a Sunday saying, did you see that? But that's, I think, been the fun part of this, too, tracking on all these trends is, you know, as we paid attention to them and looked at all these ball games, it was seeing a play in this game 2 weeks ago in the NFL show up in a college game and vice versa.
And if you're out there and you're a coach and you're listening to this and you're thinking, yeah, but I don't have Lamar Jackson, I think that something that I have been surprised, and I've mentioned it earlier, is that some of these same concepts, included with jet sweeps and arounds and pullers and all that, are occurring with at places where the quarterback's not that mobile. They're finding ways to get the first ball carrier maybe to be somebody that exchanges it off to another person or whatever. We saw San Francisco do a good job of that, the 49ers. And, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo's not, you know, he's not Lamar Jackson. So there are ways that people are finding to be creative with what we're talking about and with not the, obviously, you know, talented Lamar Jackson type.
Well, I mentioned to you guys before we got going here, not necessarily a trend, but a team I wanted to mention. These guys, I mean, if you're looking maybe for somebody to study and to figure out what they're doing the right way in their program, Dave Walker, who's been an NFHS National Coach of the Year, I think it was 2017, he's in Martinsburg, West Virginia, and these guys just won another state championship. And this particular year, and this is not out of the ordinary, they've been doing this for a number of years now. They've outscored their opponents 810 to 122. That's an average of 57.9 to 8.7 a game. And I was telling you, I had the chance. I saw on Facebook Live they had a link there to this game, and I turned it on. They were going in to go ahead. It was 14-14. At 3:16 left in the half, they score their 21st point. And so there's 3 minutes and 16 seconds left. The halftime score was 42-14. I've never seen anything like it. You know, you had two teams who were battling it out to that point, almost going in even at the half. You know, they just went up. And then all of a sudden, you talk about just an opportunistic team. There was a special teams error where they got the ball back. It was a forced three and out. They got the ball really quick, went down the field, I think, in one or two plays, scored. Kickoff, fumble on a kickoff. You know, these guys were pretty good on special teams and getting down. Their kicker was getting it high in the air and, you know, putting some spin on that ball. It went off of a guy who was trying to fair catch it. One play and score. You know, another, they kick it off. I believe it was a fumble on second down. They get the ball and score. Like, I mean, these guys were just really good at running their offense at a tempo, and you could tell they were very coached up. So Coach Walker's been on our podcast before a couple times here. I think they're doing a great job over there. And, I mean, it's an interesting story, too. You know, it's a small community that has, you know, some issues socially, but these kids rally around football and just do a great job there. And, you know, I think we see that time and time again in this game. I think it's a great part of it. So not necessarily a trend, but just wanted to give a shout out to those guys and you know, let everybody know that might be a program you want to look at or connect with Coach Walker and see what you can learn from those guys over there. But looking at this time of the year, you know, it's a time, a couple weeks back, Charlie, you mentioned you know, special teams really being a big factor as we were winding down the season, getting into some big games, some rivalry games, some championship games. And, you know, I mentioned in that high school game, special teams were a big part of it, you know, with their kickoff team getting the ball back for them. But we saw that, you know, wasn't necessarily one where Ohio State was able to get an advantage, but I think they stopped the momentum of Wisconsin, at least for a little bit. I think got everything back to kind of even keel. They went down, they didn't score, but they flipped the field. And I thought that special teams play where they went for a fake punt deep in their own territory. Definitely some courage there to call that play, but that was a play I think that started to change really the momentum of that game.
Well, I think it shows the mental thought process of a coach like Ryan Day or a guy that gets in that situation. I mean, hats off to, you know, fans a lot of times want to talk about Ohio State or somebody like that that plays in a close game or doesn't come out very well. To me, heck, that's a sign of a good football team. They took it on the chin hard in that first quarter. But you sit there and look at Ryan Day, and I mean, he's got a fake in. He's not scared to use it. He understands that, like you said, didn't end up counting or ending up in 6 points, but it did flip the field. And we don't know what the value of that is. It's hard to go back and check that. But if you're a high school coach out there, and you just watched the college game and the NFL game in the past month, it's undisputable. I mean, and I'm a old special teams coach from years and years and years, always probably the way I got to coach that long. And it's not as exciting as offense and defense. I'm telling you, it's not. I like the offense and defense probably, and for the most part, better too. But if you're looking for a way to get an edge and win two or three extra games, and we say this every year, but it's amazing how people let it go. It has been proven over the past month, just looking at the college game and even the NFL game. Big games have been won in special teams.
Well, you mentioned Coach Day there as well, and, you know, an NFL background. And we talked about this a little bit too. Just seeing really a patience in the way he coaches the game. You know, I'm sure there were a lot of maybe fans panicked at that point. What's happened, Ohio State? Oh, my God, we're down 14-0. I know the announcers wanted to keep putting up the stat that Ohio State up to that point had only, you know, not been in the lead for 9 minutes the whole season, and it's been, you know, whatever it was, 21, 30, et cetera, as the game went on. And, you know, they just kept doing their thing. They just kept getting points on the board. You know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, as that game went on, you know, they would get stopped in the red zone, kick a field goal, right? Get their points on the board. And there is that, you know, kind of a feel like there's a difference when you watch an NFL game and a college game, and the NFL games are going to be a lot tighter. And it's almost like there's guys managing the game to just be in it in the final drive and have a chance to win it at the end. And there's some of that you see, I think, carried over in the way that Ryan Day approaches the game.
I think so. And that's one of the lessons that I learned my 9 years is that, and the NFL is changing some too, but you know, you, a lot of the times we're going to slug it out for three quarters and there was going to be a play here, a play there. And if the game ended up being more than a touchdown or a field goal or 10 points, it's probably because the one team got behind and then you had to be, you know, you had to be more risky with your calls, and it normally doesn't work out for you when you're playing that level of football. But watching Ohio State and watching Ryan Day, I think you're exactly right. Even some of the plays that we did on All 22 Tuesday, you know, obviously we're taking that video off of the TV and you're looking at the face of some of the Ohio State defensive players when these crazy, you know, Wisconsin's running this crazy scheme and it's a little different and they're having trouble slowing down. There wasn't a face of panic. It was a face of they got us, you know, but we're going to be okay. Even when it was 21-7. And, I think that's, you know, it's really easy these days because of social media, because of media in general, if you're a head coach to panic, because guess what? 100,000 people in that stadium are panicking. Everybody's panicking. You don't know it, but everybody's panicking on social media and the network is. But if you just play one play at a time, old cliche, and, you know, worry about winning the next down, then that's, to me, every team's going to run into one of those. Let's stop and look at it this year. And I know I'm getting long-winded here. You got that game. You sit there, Clemson had one of those against North Carolina. I mean, every team, maybe not LSU, but almost every team has had a game to where you had to take a punch and come back.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into our next conversation here, which is timely for this part of the year where it is job change time, right? A lot of them happen just over the weekend. You know, you see a guy win a conference championship at Memphis, and later that day he's the head football coach at Florida State. You know, just those kinds of things happening. You know, Zach, we were talking a little bit about this idea of, you know, maybe a thing starting to change a little bit here in the approach of some of these top-level coordinators. Number one, the money they're making to stay at those places instead of going and taking something that is a builder, they're staying where they're at and, you know, continuing to have some success. Certainly the money is there to allow them to do that. But, you know, as we were talking, it's one of those things that, you know, just because somebody is an outstanding play caller or coach on one side of the ball doesn't mean that necessarily it's going to translate into that coach being a great head coach. In fact, there's a lot of skills. There's a, you know, definitely a demeanor that has to be different between those two positions. And, you know, we're seeing maybe that that might change a little bit here as far as a trend in college hiring.
Yeah, Keith, you know, you'll get some guys like Dave Aranda and Joe Brady here soon at LSU. You know, they're going to be making as much money as coordinators as other head coaches are in their own conference. I mean, if you're making $2.5 to $3 million as a coordinator, there's maybe six head coaches at some lower level schools in your own conference are probably only making $3 or $3.5 million. So I think, you know, it comes down to, do you really want to leave that situation? You know, a good situation where it's a really good culture, you really like the head coach, you really like your assistant. Recruiting's quite a bit easier at these places. Job security is probably a little bit better because you're winning 10 games every year. You know, do you really want to throw that away to, you know, be the head honcho, get the head job for an extra maybe $2 million a year? I mean, I get over 5 years, that's probably $10 million. But in the end, you got to look. I mean, once you leave this place as the OC or DC, there's a chance that you might not get another OC, DC job like this for maybe another five to 10 years. I mean, you can be a head coach, but if you get fired for 3 years, you're going to start over again. Not start over, but you'll be an OC or DC again, and it might not be at a place like the place before where the head coach is great to work for, let you run things the way you want to run them. So, you know, I just wonder if we're very close to seeing a point in time where these coordinators at these top colleges are not seeing it's worth leaving to go be head coaches at other places that are going to make barely any more money, take on a lot more stress, and really probably get fired after 3 or 4 years because it's such a big turnaround. So, and you know, it kind of circles back to, I'm kind of thinking how long before some of these group of five coaches at a place, maybe like a good stable place like Memphis or Cincinnati or Houston, I wonder how long it is before they stop leaving these places to go take lower level power five jobs. So say you're at a Cincinnati or somewhere, you know, is Cincinnati where you're making 2.5 to 3, is it really worth leaving there to go to a power five school like, say, I don't know, Minnesota and make 3.5, where you're going to compete against teams or, you know, four or five teams a year that have twice as good players as you? It's going to be a big turnaround. Fans will be frustrated after 2 years that you're still not winning. So I just kind of look at it like, you know what, maybe a group of five jobs is better. You know, the money's not that much different. You know, I mean, and at this point, they're recruiting really well too. I think that Cincinnati has a couple four-star recruits this year, and I know those schools like Houston and Memphis, they'll get these really good recruits too. So, you know, I just wonder how, really, really, how soon would see coaches start to just stay put, or even coordinators at that point, just stay put where they are? Because it's, number one, it's a better culture, it's a better environment, better recruiting situation, and it's a lot less stress.
Yeah, well, you know, what's interesting, Zach, is on this podcast, as I've talked to, you know, a lot of those guys who at the high school level have had success, they've talked about, especially for young coaches, how important it is for their career to be at a place where they're going to get some mentoring, where they're going to continue to learn, and they're not just jumping at a title. You know, I did a poll that 700 coaches or so answered, you know, a few weeks back, and it indicated like 46% of the guys who answered that survey were looking for a change in jobs, either looking for their first head coaching job, another head coaching job, or, you know, a change as a coordinator or a position coach. And, you know, there's something to be said about consistency, both within a program, but also for your career. And there are those opportunities you got to look at. And sometimes the change is good and is necessary. But I think I'm seeing too many times, and Charlie, I think you'd agree, you've probably seen this a lot over the course of your career, where, you know, guys are jumping at titles and making moves that maybe in the short term seem to be wise, but, you know, not looking at the big picture, like Zach was mentioning there, of you know, what it might be like for their career. I can't say that I didn't make some of those mistakes myself as a younger coach. But I think there's a lot to be said and a lot to even learn from. You look at the four teams who are in the college playoff. I mean, those are programs where essentially guys stayed. You know, Ryan Day, you heard about all the opportunities he had. And, you know, he ends up pretty quickly being the next head coach at Ohio State. You know, Ed Orgeron. You have Dabo, right? Lincoln Riley taking over for Stoops. Like, those guys came from in the program. Now, again, could they have gone out maybe a little bit earlier somewhere else and taken a job? You know, could Dave Aranda leave LSU right now, or Brady, their OC, and go get a job? The answer is yes, but you also see those guys starting to pony up for their coordinators as well.
Yeah, Keith, I just don't think there is a formula for it. I think you hit it on the head a second ago when you said every guy needs to sit down and look at his situation, because Zach is on to something there where there's no doubt. First of all, that falls into the haves and have-nots. And the haves, and it's just the way it's going to be right now, that if you're a coordinator or you're a head coach with the haves, then you're going to be in an elite pay situation, which is not always the best situation. I mean, you can still have an elite pay situation and have the deck stacked somewhat against you and maybe not be in the best working situation. But yeah, when it's hard. When I moved a lot as a young coach and got moved a lot as a young and older coach, meaning got fired as our staff got fired. And so, you know, it's I've always told young coaches that in order to move up, then you are going to have to move, and you need to be careful about that, because I was, you know, I tell them I was always single, and never had to do that. I had to move my kids, move my wife and all that. So, you know, you need to be careful, first of all, about your structure of your home life, not looking up with regret, you know, down the road, not having spent any time with your kids and they're 20 some years old and married. But, you know, I think there's a good blend of moving when the timing is right, when the situation is right, but at the same time, exactly, not jumping at everything, that just because you're going to go from Division II to, you know, FCS or whatever, because I think that's when you get yourself in trouble, when you're just chasing status and you're chasing you know, where somebody's going to say you're coaching at, and I'm just throwing names out here. You're coaching at James Madison and you were coaching at Fair State, you know, something like that. It might be the right move, but it might not.
Yeah, and you're right. There is no single formula. I would say if you're out there and you're looking at that, I mean, the process itself of, you know, maybe not every year, but every few years, just being able to go out and there may be an opportunity, somebody wants you to interview for a job. If it's not a big disruption, I would highly recommend it. I think there's a lot in that interview process that you find out about yourself. You have to revisit some things about your coaching philosophy. You know, you get into the groove of doing things, and some of those things, you know, you continue to do because you're having success with them. But it's that opportunity to take a step back and learn and think about who you are and what you believe in. And, you know, if you have that situation where you got to go out and sell it to somebody, you know, I think it's worth taking it. I think at the very least, it's prep for those opportunities later of something that is a definite yes. And you feel like, yeah, I really want to go after this one. So, you know, it's worth looking at. You don't want to be the guy who every single year is out doing that. You know, the guy who lives on Football Scoop all the time. But, you know, with those situations, you always have the opportunity to say no, right? If it's not, you know, an interview is always a two-way thing, right? You are interviewing them as much as they're interviewing you. And, you know, if you are in that process, we do have a playlist of 5 podcasts we did from last year at this time. We're going to put that out there and some blogs that Zach will share as well here in the coming weeks. There definitely is, you know, a game plan in that approach as well. But I think it's good for your process as a professional, as a coach, to, you know, to do that occasionally, even when maybe that opportunity isn't right. If you haven't been out and haven't been in the marketplace for a while, it's good to go out there and understand, you know, understand your value in the marketplace, I guess, is the best way I could put it.
I would only add that if you are a coordinator, make sure you sit down with your head coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've worked for those guys that said, if you go for an interview, you better get it. and I don't think that happens as much as it did in the old days. But, yeah, once again, just our conversation right here is a little bit here or there. It's all about you as a person. But, yeah.
Well, guys, we're going to pick this back up. It is we got a slight pause here till December 20th. And then it's bull season, and that is, you know, in full force till January 13th. So we said we'd kind of hit pause here for a little bit and come back after bull season and talk about the different things we saw develop during bull season, because that's always interesting, like the wrinkles that guys have. They good and a bad thing. They have some time and they add some things. But then I think, as we mentioned on All 22 Tuesday, you know, some things that, for example, Ohio State's been doing all year long, it's going to show up again. So we'll track on all those things for you. We'll come back one more time to wrap up this season here in the new year and after the bowl season. But guys, it's been a great season, and looking at all this, looking at these trends, we'll continue to write about these. We will look at and maybe even check in the next time at what's going to be going on in the clinics as well, because as soon as that bull season ends around that time, all those clinics should be released. So we'll take a look at what's going to be out there as well and where you might be able to learn some of this stuff. One great place to learn it is at USA Football's National Conference. Please go to nationalconference.com/podcast. And if you enter the code podcast179, you'll save on that event. It's always been a great event. Charlie, I know you've been out there. Zach, was your first year last year. This will be my fourth. But I can tell you it's a very unique event. It's like no other clinic out there.
Yeah, Keith, it's always been fun. And this year is at one of the cities where I've worked and lived, in Louisville, Kentucky. That will be a good one.
All right, guys. Well, we will check in again. You guys have a great holiday season, great bowl season, and we'll be back at Trends Day one more time in the beginning of 2020.